You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, May 23rd, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We are back at Delta 9 Studios in beautiful Legal Potland, Oregon. Big thanks go out to Corey and Kendra and all the folks from the Cannabis Classic. I had a great time this weekend in Anchorage, and the show from yesterday is finally posted on Marijuana Agenda. If you want to catch a special Toker Talk Radio episode with members of the Alaska cannabis community, that's attached to the most current show post only at mjagenda.com, so check that out while you can. Coming up on today's show, we've got a couple of new segments to debut, starting with Expanded Mind, our look at psychedelic research in America. We're going to be giving you a clip from the Psychedelic Science 2017 conference. Amanda Fielding discusses the future of psychedelics in medicine. Also coming up in the second half hour, we've got our new segment, Shark Sessions with the Marijuana Show. It's the reality show that's been called Shark Tank meets Marijuana, and their season 2 premiere starts in July on Amazon Prime. We're going to get you caught up with some highlights from season 1 coming up in our second half hour. Also on the show, drug war data mining on the effect of marijuana legalization in neighboring states. But first, we start things off with our cannabis headline news. We've got data from Trump's budget request for the Drug Czar's office.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful Legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com. City of Portland permit number 17-159855.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Tuesday, May 23rd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. President Trump's budget request to Congress for fiscal year 2018 includes the greatest amounts ever requested for two federal programs that are key to anti-marijuana efforts. Included in the increase are a request of $246.5 million for the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas Program, or HIDA, and a $91.9 million request for the Drug-Free Communities Support Program. Both are the highest funding amounts ever requested. HIDA is the program that funds partnerships between federal and state law enforcement, including the annual report from the Rocky Mountain HIDA that uses misleading statistics to frighten Americans about Colorado's marijuana legalization. The Drug Free Communities program issues grants to local anti-drug groups that often spend that money on false propaganda campaigns against statewide legalization initiatives. The ONDCP's press release notes that their increased budget request coincides with increased drug abuse in the nation, quote, driven by an increase in marijuana use, end quote. Vermont Governor Phil Scott says he still hasn't decided whether he will allow the state to legalize the recreational use of marijuana, but he won't allow the bill to become law without his signature. Scott's office said Tuesday that the Republican governor will agree to sign the bill into law or veto it. Scott, a Republican, plans to announce Wednesday his decision on the marijuana legalization bill that was passed by the legislature earlier this month. The governor has said he's not philosophically opposed to marijuana legalization, but he has concerns about highway safety and protecting children from marijuana. Under the legislation, small amounts of marijuana would be legal to possess and grow for anyone over age 21. A commission would develop a proposal to tax and regulate marijuana. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has vetoed a bill legalizing industrial hemp. Proponents of industrial hemp said it would provide Arizona farmers with a new cash crop. Technically, hemp production, like marijuana, remains illegal. But this measure was built on a 2014 federal law that allows state departments of agriculture to begin cultivating industrial hemp in certain circumstances, including research. The governor said his only reason for the veto was the failure of the legislation to provide funding for the State Department of Agriculture to administer the program. Ducey on Monday also signed a bill requiring school districts and charter schools to report the number of suspensions and expulsions that involve possession, use, or sale of illegal drugs. The Oregon House of Representatives Monday passed a bill 51-7 that requires medical marijuana to undergo the same tight-looped tracking as the recreational product. The requirement is the most significant of several tweaks the bill makes to Oregon's marijuana regulations. The Senate passed the bill 23-6 on May 10th. Under existing law, medical producers, processors, wholesalers, and retailers have to self-report to the Oregon Health Authority how much marijuana they have. This bill requires all of that product to be tracked with a barcode or computer chip that follows the plant from a seedling to its final product. The bill exempts medical marijuana cardholders and home growers from the tracking requirements. Aside from increases in adult marijuana possession arrests in border counties, a new working paper from the National Bureau of Economic Research found that state marijuana legalization has little effect on neighboring states. In the paper, The Cross-Border Spillover Effects of Recreational Marijuana Legalization, professors Zhuang Hao and Benjamin Cowan from the School of Economic Sciences at Washington State University found that legalization, quote, causes a sharp increase in marijuana possession arrests of border counties relative to non-border counties, end quote. However, the study finds that the increased arrests are almost entirely among adults, saying, quote, legalization has no impact on juvenile marijuana possession arrests, end quote, according to the data, which also show that there is no, quote, evidence that marijuana sale or manufacture arrests of border counties are arrested on net by legalization. Since 2014, when recreational marijuana became legal in Colorado, the arts community has felt the economic pressure from marijuana entrepreneurs. Since legalization, the state has awarded more than 300 licenses for Denver-based grow operations that have been driving up the cost of warehouse space. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Tuesday, May 23rd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's time for Cannabis Facts About Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may in fact be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from the SilverTour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The marijuana agenda, like the conservative agenda, minus the hypocrisy.
I'm Russ Belleville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Activism begins with ACT. The Marijuana Agenda features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's Activist Agenda.
Today for the Activist Agenda, we're beginning a brand new segment, and it's called Expanded Mind, where we take a look at the use of psychedelics for research and medical purposes. For our intro, we begin with Amanda Fielding, who spoke at the Psychedelic Science Research Conference 2017.
So without further ado, I'm going to turn you over to Amanda, who I've already introduced, but I'll remind you that she's the founder and director of the Beckley Foundation and co-directs the Beckley Imperial Research Program with Professor Nutt, who will be speaking after her. So Amanda, thank you very much for joining us. Help me welcome Amanda, please.
Hello, everyone. I hope you won't mind having seen me in the morning, seeing me again. After decades of draconian drug laws and repressive stigma obstructing the development of psychedelic research, we are finally seeing a new dawn. Clinical studies are progressing at a pace. Neuroimaging is breaking new ground in helping explain the mechanisms underlying the action of these drugs, and the media are awash with stories of the therapeutic power of psychedelics. There's an increasing clinical evidence of something that users of psychedelics have always known, that these drugs are invaluable tools with which to unlock the deeper levels of the psyche, and that they can transform the individual in profound and beneficial ways that are the new neural transformational medicines of the future. The combination of psychedelics and brain imaging enables us to study the mind and consciousness, the very things that define our quality of life and indeed the human condition, at a new level. And interest in consciousness is where my own personal journey began. I grew up in a very isolated rural situation with nothing much to do except drift around dreaming of possible realities. Later, this developed into a passion for mysticism and the unifying mystical state of different religions. William James and Aldous Huxley had both been family friends of my grandparents, and perhaps the ideas of these men silently permeated the environment. James had declared that compared with what we ought to be, we're only half awake, a sentiment that has resonated with me throughout my life. Huxley's idea about the brain as a reducing valve, constraining consciousness, always made sense to me, and in many ways predicted the findings of our neuroscientific research today. At 16, I left school early because the nuns refused to allow me books on Buddhism. I then studied under the world's leading expert on mysticism, Professor Zainer of All Souls in Oxford. He had recently written Mysticism, Sacred and Profane, which designated his own psychedelic experience as profane. It was some years later, in 1965, that I took my first LSD and realized that he was wrong, and that far from being profane, the experience was spiritually profound. It clearly exposed the different states of consciousness hiding behind the filmiest of screens that William James had described. Unfortunately, in 1966, a malintentioned individual who ran the World Psychedelic Center in Chelsea and who had turned Leary onto his first LSD trip spiked my coffee with thousands of doses of LSD, which he kept in a famous vinegar bottle. Once I regained my consciousness, I retreated to a hut in the countryside and pulled the fragments of my shattered psyche back together again. This might have put me off psychedelics for life, but by good faith, I soon after met Bart Hoogers, a Dutch scientist of exceptional insight, who had developed a hypothesis of how LSD worked in the brain and how one can maintain control over one's expanded consciousness by ensuring a sufficient supply of vitamin C and glucose. Because we fell in love, I pulled myself together and dived back into a life enhanced by LSD. In those early days before Prohibition, we took large doses on a regular basis to enhance and sharpen our cognitive abilities. We wanted to maintain our concentration in order to gain a deeper insight into the human condition and to build up a better understanding of the importance of the ego and of its role in forming a filter between external reality as it is and the internal perception of it. We humans are unique in having developed this ego mechanism, which is based on word recognition. It underlies our brilliance, but also our neurosis and psychopathologies. Barth's hypothesis was that altered states of consciousness brought about by psychedelics are based on an increased volume of blood in the brain capillaries, thereby providing more brain cells with oxygen and glucose. His other major insight was that the first scientific description of the ego as a conditioned reflex mechanism which controls the distribution of blood in the brain. With a better understanding of the ego and the mechanisms underlying the altered states, we were able to use the LSD experience both to enhance our working abilities and to delve deeply into the psyche and wash out repressed trauma. I felt as if I had passed through a portal of new understanding, both of myself and of humankind. It was then that I decided I'd found my mission in life, to scientifically research these changing states of consciousness and their potential value for the individual and humanity, and to integrate this knowledge into modern society. However, as a female with a vision, but no letters after her name and little money, how can one change global drug policy and undertake controversial scientific research into psychedelics and consciousness? Answer: become a foundation. So, in 1996, I did just that and set up the Foundation to Further Consciousness, later renamed the Beckley Foundation. I gained credibility by getting the best scientists in the field onto my scientific advisory board, starting with Albert Hofmann. My first scientific endeavor to investigate the truth of our hypothesis was in 1998 with Franz Wollenweider. Using PET, we investigated the changes in blood supply in the brain brought about by psilocybin. The results were positive, but the paper, sadly, was never published. However, in these early days, my main focus was on policy change, because psychedelics had become so taboo that it was almost impossible to find scientists or institutions willing to get involved and to face the regulatory barriers to conducting the research, particularly if there was a possibility of positive findings which could ruin their career. I set about organizing a series of international seminars at the House of Lords, to which I invited leading scientists, politicians, and experts. Key policy issues were debated that shed light on the harms of the present prohibitionist approach and how best to develop new policies to reduce harms, improve health, cut costs, and respect human rights. Through the Beckley Foundation, we produced reports and books and set up organizations, which later became independent. We presented at the UN and advised international governments. Slowly, attitudes began to change. The devastation caused by the unintended fallout of the war on drugs was far beyond the damage of the drugs themselves. I think there's been no other civil issue which has caused such unnecessary suffering worldwide. The drug laws, which were created by the US through the mouth of the United Nations, were based on misconceptions and political expediencies. Although they have shown themselves to be a total failure, they are set in stone like the Book of Mormon. Hundreds of billions of dollars are spent each year. Prisons are filled. Tens of thousands die. Corruption is rampant. And the flow of drugs just increases. There has been no commitment to reviewing, let alone reversing, these policies. I watched the drug war take root in the early 70s and grow like a cancer through the flesh of society. It is a clear reflection of the mistakes that man can make because of the interference of a misinformed ego. Surprisingly, however, the US, which prohibits the rest of the world from reforming its drug policies, has made great strides itself in reforming cannabis policy, a testament to the fact that change can and will occur. Decades from now, people will puzzle at the absurdity of our current drug laws and be appalled by the suffering they have caused. Among the sources of suffering is the fact that research into the healing potential of psychedelics and cannabis has virtually been blocked, so millions of people have been deprived of psychedelic-assisted therapy which could have improved or healed their conditions. For many years, I found myself caught in a catch-22. Policy reform was impossible without scientific evidence to support it, and scientific research was impossible without policy reform.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
We'll be right back. New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cannabis Sports Medicine from the Gridiron Cannabis Coalition. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy. Because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Data Mines, we want to take a look at a story I briefly mentioned in the cannabis headline news that told us that marijuana legalization has little effect on the neighboring states. And aside from increases in adult marijuana possession arrests, and only in the border counties near legalized states, this new working paper from the National Bureau of Economic Research finds that the state marijuana legalization in Washington and Colorado had little to no effect on the neighboring states. Now, for Washington, they looked at Oregon and Idaho. For Colorado, they had more states to choose from. So a lot of their data is very heavily focused on what happened to the states near Colorado. But in this paper, and by the way, the paper is called The Cross-Border Spillover Effects of Recreational Marijuana Legalization. These two professors from the School of Economic Sciences at Washington State, Zhuang Hao and Benjamin Cowan, found that legalization, quote, causes a sharp increase in marijuana possession arrests of border counties relative to non-border counties. If a county shares a physical border with a legalized state, it experiences an increase in marijuana possession arrests of roughly 30%. However, we don't know what that means necessarily, and it's important to note that these increased arrests in the border counties are almost entirely adults. The youth arrest rate stays the same, or at least it changes with respect to the same changes you're finding statewide in other counties and nationwide for that matter. So it doesn't seem to affect the youth arrest rate, but it does seem to affect the adult arrest rate. And they did some interesting parsing of the data by mapping out the interstate highways and freeway systems out of Colorado and out of Washington State, the counties nearby. And they theorize that for the people in the border counties, adults, it's, you know, economically easy enough to drive across the state line, get some legal weed, and drive back. And that might be leading this increase that they find. The researchers wrote, quote, legalization has no impact on juvenile marijuana possession arrests and no evidence that marijuana sales or marijuana manufacture, that would be cultivation, arrests of border counties are affected on net by legalization, end quote. So no increase in sales, no increase in the black market that they're always worried about, no increase in the cultivation arrests that they're always worried about. Now, while the counties that are bordering the legalized states saw an increase in adult possession arrests, there was also an interesting finding from these researchers that the counties farther away from the border increased a decline in adult possession arrests. Interesting, the arrests in the rest of the state near a legalized state actually declined. Another interesting find from this paper is that impaired driving statistics improved as well. The authors concluded, quote, DUI arrests decreased markedly for both border counties and non-border counties after legalization, end quote. Now, it is important to note that there's a lot of restrictions on how well you can study this sort of thing. We don't know that the arrests have gone up or gone down because of more people using or because it's more people getting caught. Or has legalization mean fewer people getting caught in certain circumstances? The authors cautioned about this. They say you can't necessarily tie the increase in border arrests to increased trafficking of marijuana across the state lines. They say, quote, following legalization, police officers might adopt new techniques or use more resources toward cracking down on what they perceive to be more illegal marijuana possession, end quote. And this is something I've always illustrated with an analogy of fishing, right? You go to the stream on Tuesday to go fishing and you catch two fish. You go to the stream on Wednesday to go fishing, you catch 20 fish. Does that mean there's more fish in the stream on Wednesday? Or did you bring better bait on Wednesday? Did you bring a net on Wednesday? Did you find a better fishing hole on Wednesday? Did you spend more time fishing on Wednesday? There's all sorts of reasons why you might have caught more fish the next day. Same thing goes for the cops. They may be catching more people with marijuana possession because now the state next door has legalized it, and that's the first thing they're looking for and the first thing they're trying to get you to admit when you cross the border and they get you in a traffic stop. So the authors didn't find more police officers being hired in the bordering counties. So that kind of starts to suggest that, yeah, maybe they are just trying harder to catch people with weed. In conclusion, the authors suggest that marijuana legalization could cause an increase in law enforcement and criminal justice costs for those neighboring states. Well, perhaps those states would be better served by joining their neighbor and legalize marijuana for adult use and save those law enforcement costs and earn some tax revenue to boot. How about that? One more piece of interesting data that was included in the appendix of this paper, some of the tables that they had included, included a table showing Washington State's retail marijuana prices since legalization. And I just wanted to bring this up because if you'll remember in 2011, 6 years ago, when Washington State was gearing up with I-502, there were a bunch of people in Washington, some of them named Steve, who were telling us that, oh, we can't legalize under I-502. There'll be $600 ounces. The state will end up charging you $600 for an ounce of marijuana. It'll be ridiculous. You'll have $600 marijuana. Well, here's a look at the graph of that situation. And as you can see, sorry about that, folks. Didn't expect that to be happening. I don't know where that was sitting. But in this item here, you can see that the price per gram of cannabis in Washington State, which was well above $30 a gram when they first started, is now below $10 a gram for the past few months that have been cited in this data. So the price has fallen by two-thirds since the advent of legalization. We're now sitting in the $250 ounce range, not the $600 ounce range. I just wanted to make sure everybody was up to date on that. The $600 ounce prediction doesn't seem to have come true. All right, we got to take a break. And when we come back, another new segment here on the show, the introduction of our Shark Sessions segment, where we learn all about the ganjapreneurs fighting to make it in the marijuana industry.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cultivator's Corner with Jorge Cervantes from MarijuanaGrowing.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
This is Shark Sessions, brought to you by The Marijuana Show at themarijuanashow.com. The marijuana industry is the fastest growing industry in North America. Learn from the sharks who are betting on the future of cannabis and from the entrepreneurs who are creating the next big thing in marijuana. Executive producers Karen Paul and Wendy Robbins bring you the best in cannabis business advice from The Marijuana Show, featured here in this edition of Shark Sessions.
All right, welcome everybody to our first edition of Shark Sessions here on the Marijuana Agenda, featuring the best of the Marijuana Show, which has already had its first season and is beginning its second season premiere in July, exclusively on Amazon Prime Video Streaming. So check that out. It's been called the Shark Tank for Marijuana Entrepreneurs. And to get you ready for season two, we've got this highlight reel of the best of season one of The Marijuana Show.
Competing for the chance of a lifetime, the new show looking for pot entrepreneurs right here in Colorado.
Dozens of people pitching their ideas for products and services to change the pot industry and make them marijuana millionaires.
Have you heard the news? There's a new doctor in town. And she is making a new brand of bitters. But watch out, these aren't your grandma's bitters.
I'm here all the way from Washington, D.C. to introduce to you Hemp Butter All-in-One.
We're going to change the way people grow marijuana.
So my idea is a convenience food delivery service phone app.
We would like to have you help us open the first country club for the cannabis user.
Anyone in cannabis can tell you that this industry changes day over day, and if you're not quick and you're not nimble, you're not going to survive.
Innovating the marijuana industry with the agriculture pods, that is the springboard to a much, much, much bigger plan.
So how much do you need?
500,000 to a million, that's what he wrote.
No, that's way out of whack.
I was an animator. Back in the 90s, I worked on X-Men, Batman, Fantastic Four.
We love Batman.
And my fear is that I don't make something of this.
This here is Hydrolock. It is a nanopolymer. Once you add water to it, it retains 1,000 times its weight in water. And I am directing this towards the grill industry to preserve water.
I think it's a
callback.
Yeah.
Callback.
We'd like to call you back.
Call you back.
You are called back.
I'm called back. Woo! So I'd like you to approach 100 people in a week in terms of just retail stores.
Oh, I can do that overnight.
250 testimonials.
250.
250.
Yeah, we just upped the ante. 250.
250.
I like it. Okay. Hey, go big or go home, right?
That's right.
Go big or go home.
Hi, friend. Welcome. Come on. Come on over, get you a pop. Everybody knows I'm rolling it at me. Come on over, get you a pop. Everybody knows I'm rolling it at me. Rolling it up, holding it up, smoking it up. I'm talking it up, rolling it up, holding it up, smoking it up.
Guys, you are the very first contestants on the Marijuana Show. You've made history.
It's taken a lot for me to be here. In the span of 2 months, I lost my wife. My car got stolen. My truck got impounded. I lost my shop. And I lost my investor / benefactor who passed away.
I'm Michael Ring. I own a company called CleanTech Systems.
My project is CleanTech Agriculture, converting 53-foot trailers into agriculture pods, digitally controlled, renewable energy-based.
And so in the span of 2 months, I went from almost being into the position of changing the world to having nothing.
Something no one knows about me, or most people don't know, is that I'm an inventor through to my core. I have about 200 patents that are available to file from this point in time.
I was able to overcome my fear of rejection by making it on the Marijuana Show. Wendy and Karen believed in me enough. They sent me on a challenge to pitch my product to different locations. So I just hit the block running, and the overwhelming positive feedback that I got made me realize that this is something that I should be proud of. I have nothing to be afraid of. I have other people that believe in me. I need to believe in myself.
My business is Hemp Butter All-in-One. It's a cannabis-based multi-purpose moisturizer that you can use on hair, hands, body, and more. I need $82,000. I'm willing to share this percentage of my company. What is a fair percentage for me to offer where I'm not cheating myself or potential investor?
We are currently in a old Airstream and just left a big house to make this come true.
Is marijuana a Schedule I drug? Under the Federal Controlled Substance Act of 1970.
Yes, it is.
Okay, and this is a two-part because they can steal on this. What makes a drug subject to Schedule I classification? And you can consult. You got to hold. They get a chance to answer.
No medical benefit. Habit forming.
No medical benefit. That's the rationale behind it.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Go grab a pen.
Everyone.
Now, we all know that even though it's classified as a Schedule I drug, it's just not the case. There are medical benefits to it.
This is for my beautiful daughter, Namani. And Namani, I just want to let you know that I love you so much, and I'm doing this for you, and you are my inspiration and my drive.
So what are you going to do with the investment?
So what I'm going to do with the investment is it's going towards startup costs. We're as well going to be having two grows for recreational and medical marijuana.
My mother died in my arms 12 years ago of colon cancer. I've lost just about every best friend I've had in the last several years. And I know I'm going to lose my fiance, and I'm going to lose my brother.
As a disabled person and as somebody who's been on welfare, I now know the organizations that I can help, and I will do really good things with the money.
Question for Tony. Why does your company have high growth potential?
High growth potential because it crosses all the lines. It goes from biking to guns to cigarettes to unmentionables.
Here they come. Look at this. Looks like they're rounding that last ball.
So a lot of my coworkers and a lot of my friends, they always ask me, Patrick, what drives you? What motivates you? why do you work so hard? A lot of it comes down to my family history. Long story short, both of my parents are refugees of the Vietnam War. My dad, he was on the second to last 747 out of Saigon Airport before it fell. My mom, fifth child out of 10, after the war was over, they fled the country on a boat. They were out at sea for 3 weeks with nothing but buckets of water and bananas. And both of my parents did everything they could to come here and provide their children and their grandchildren an opportunity to live the American dream. Life's short. We passed through this way once, and I'm going to make sure that I make the most of it. In the state of Washington, they project over 200,000 pounds of recreational cannabis alone, not counting medicinal, recreational cannabis will go from producer to processor to retailer. Sure. At $5,000 a pound wholesale, we're talking $1 billion. You know, if $1 billion of wholesale cannabis flows through just the state of Washington alone, and we have 70, 80, 90% of that market, mm-hmm. you know, and we can proxy 2% transaction fee for every single dollar that goes mm-hmm. through that system, you're talking about $20 million from one state alone.
How much funding are you looking for, and what will it be used for?
So because we're rolling out with three new products, by the end of this year, mm-hmm. we're looking for anywhere between $3 to $5 million.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi there.
There you go.
Welcome.
Woo! Cool, dude.
Didn't know.
You're able to sell in 50 states, and obviously the market is expanding very quickly medically, 23 states, so we have to think outside of ourselves locally. So I would be interested in having those conversations with you and maybe bring some people to the table.
Oh, it'd be just incredible. Okay, so now you know I'm going to cry.
Dude, if you film me, I'm going to say some really fucked up stuff that's going to not be arable, and I mean it.
I'm just doing my job. I'm okay. Really sorry for that.
I want to walk away from you.
My journey's so long, and I just really want someone to just, like, draw me a bunch of money and say, here, Jim, like, let's do it. I've been around so much anymore. But...
hopefully you'll be the next marijuana millionaire.
Well, I promise God, if you let this happen for me, that I would do a lot of good things with the money.
Show is available at themarijuanashow.com. Season 2 premiere coming up in July. Check it out at Amazon Prime Video. You can also find Season 1 episodes of The Marijuana Show available on YouTube. You can follow the links from themarijuanashow.com.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, you know, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Freedom Leaf Preview with Steve Bloom from Freedom Leaf Magazine. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs. Use less
I am ill. That was
the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Just in time for 420 this year, the National District Attorneys Association released a position paper on marijuana that trumps up the threat of stone drivers and babies on edibles and laments when police have to return illegally seized pot and generally acts like the district attorneys had never heard that a majority of U.S. voters approve of legalization. Position paper falls short of explicitly asking for a federal crackdown, but it hints at it through repeated emphasis that, quote, federal drug enforcement policy regarding marijuana should be applied consistently across the nation to maintain respect for the rule of law, end quote. And that's not really a surprise. Did we expect the prosecutors of America to endorse not enforcing federal laws? But the surprise is how the prosecutors made their case for their position. One concern they have about legalization is the fear of stoned mayhem on the freeway, or as I call it, SMOF. Quote, since the majority of states have legalized marijuana for medical and or recreational use, they write, marijuana impaired driving cases will continue to present unique challenges for prosecutors, end quote. Well, why since? Look, legalization doesn't invent stone drivers. Cars and weed have been around since the beginning of the 20th century. As the NDAA explains, quote, a driver who exhibits clues of impairment, along with evidence of marijuana, could be successfully prosecuted for impaired driving, end quote. Right, and that doesn't change when the possession of marijuana is legal. Now, to their credit, NDAA makes it clear that testing for marijuana and metabolites in blood and urine is a fool's errand, stating, quote, scientific studies have not yet demonstrated support for marijuana per se levels similar to alcohol, end quote. But then they go and flop when they state, quote, marijuana use has been shown to increase crash risk, end quote. Oh, man, for years now, prohibitionists have relied on this meta-analysis published in the British Medical Journal that supposed that there was a doubling of crash risk in drivers who test positive for marijuana.
The problem with that statistic is it did not correct for age and gender. Look, ask any car insurer who the worst drivers in the world are, and they'll tell you male drivers between the ages of 19 and 24. Well, guess who consumes the most marijuana the most often in America? Over 1 in 5 people aged 19 to 23 consume marijuana monthly. And at age 24, it's at 18.1%. No other age breaks the 20% rate. 19 to 23 are all over 20%. Age 24 is at 18.1%. 1 out of 5 people that age are smoking pot monthly. And when you break it down by gender, 1 in 10 men smoke pot monthly, but just 1 in 16 women smoke pot monthly. Even the feds have stopped trying to equate this marijuana crash risk. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration found recently that, quote, better controlled studies have found lower or no elevated crash risk estimates, end quote. All right, well, the other concern we get from the National District Attorneys Association is the tried and false, what about the children, or WOTC. Quote, legalization of marijuana clearly sends a message to youth that marijuana is not dangerous and increases youth access to marijuana, end quote. Well, if the youth are getting any message about legal weed, it seems to be business as usual. Washington State says, quote, rates of teen marijuana use have remained steady despite the changing landscape, end quote. Colorado says, quote, youth marijuana use remains relatively unchanged, end quote. And Oregon says, quote, recent trends in youth use have been stable, end quote. Teens also aren't finding any greater access to marijuana. Since 1975, the Monitoring the Future survey has asked 12th graders how difficult it would be to score some pot. The rate of teens responding easy or fairly easy had been as high as 90% and never dipped below 80% until the year after 4 states had legal marijuana. Now, folks, this is just common sense, really. Teens' access to weed isn't through stores. It's through the guy who deals in the parking lot behind shop class. It's older guys like me who gain increased access through legalization, as evidenced by senior use increasing by over half since legalization. The rest of their position paper touches on these old marijuana scares, like the gateway theory, debunked since 1999, pot causes IQ loss, debunked by studying twins, weed leads to dropout, unemployment, welfare, and dissatisfaction. Funny how a criminal record can do that. And legal pot has increased poison control calls, since now people can be honest about what made them or their kid or their dog sick. Even though such poison control calls are down in Colorado following a public education campaign on marijuana edibles. The district attorneys are willing to promote all these reefer madness talking points to help obfuscate this truth that's becoming clearer day by day. This nation has a mass incarceration problem, and it's fueled largely by the unchecked power of those district attorneys to prosecute drug possession. In the new book Locked In, criminal professor John Pfaff notes that between 2000 and 2014, our prison population only increased by 100,000, but 9.6 million new prisoners were minted. It's not the long-term prisoners that are the problem. It's the short-term, nonviolent offenders that shuffle in and out of the system, permanently marked as criminals for the next employment or educational aid or housing application. It's those offenders, those drug possessors, that make up the bulk of these district attorneys' workload. Research shows that 95% of all criminal cases are resolved with guilty pleas through plea bargaining. The prosecutors pile on those felony charges so that they can have more chips to bargain with in the plea bargain process. And if we legalize marijuana,
then how will these 30,000 district attorneys pile on all the extra charges? The next time they want to write a position paper on marijuana, instead of copying Kevin Samet, they ought to talk to me. That's all the time we got for this hour. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.